sit right back, then you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip.
In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Way to go, Stan. I love that.
Well, there goes that ship. We at least hope it is going down to Davy Jones. I'm Stan Hudson.
And I'm John Kurlinski, and we'd like to welcome you to another episode of
Sink the Beagle,
where we take a lighthearted look at the serious issues of creation and evolution.
Yes, and I'd like to think that after you hear us talking, you'll see that the boat of the HMS Beagle and Darwinian evolution goes
glub, 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 glub.
Exactly right.
I do nice sound effects, too.
You do. Thank you.
I should get a job at that somewhere. Well, actually, today, Stan, we're going to kind of follow up what we sort of talked a little bit about last week. We talked about under what authority, ultimate authority or ultimate truth or ultimate big picture. And actually, it kind of comes, we have a recent National Geographic Stan, for this November.
Well,
and the title, just read the title for us there.
Well, National Geographic just came out with a beautiful cover featuring the head of a lizard with great big red letters above. It says, "Was Darwin wrong?"
Yes. Okay, we're done.
That's
next
the end
show.
Of the next show we'll next talk show about.
actually, what we want
actually,
to do.
They don't say that. They really think that Darwin was right
and
not very well understood by people.
And they really, in an opening editorial, actually start saying some phrases which reveal their paradigm from which they look at life from.
Their worldview, the glasses that they look at data in the world through.
And we want to analyze a little more in depth today that idea of worldview or that idea of authority in the concept of a worldview as stated from science or history or wherever you want to look at it from. Mm-hmm. What do they say there, Stan?
Well, you know, I just wanted to say something about your worldview idea there, because here we are in election time, you know.
Just post-election just happened.
Yeah, it's just going on and just finishing up. The whole country has kind of been divided over issues and everything. And have you ever wondered, how can people look at the same world, the same country, the same planet even, and come up with diametrically opposed views or understandings? How did, 50% Republican, 50% Democrat, whatever, you know, how can there be so much difference? And it's all about worldview.
How you begin to approach looking at data or looking at life. Mm-hmm. You know, they said there in the editorial.
Yeah, by Bill Allen.
Yeah.
He first of all starts by saying, humans are not descended from apes.
But we then, agree with that.
Very good. And that's probably about the only
statement
we're going to
Okay, continue.
But then Charles Darwin never claimed we are. And actually, that's already a falsehood because
he did.
In Descent of Man, not Origin of Species, his first book, but in his second great book, where he talked about human evolution, he does say that man descended from not New World monkeys, but Old World monkeys.
And, or apes, you know, or something.
Apes, and you know, it's I'm kind of surprised he said that. But anyway, still, his ideas were misconstrued and lampooned from the beginning.
As they should have been.
Well, yes. And what Darwin actually said was that the myriad species inhabiting Earth are a result of repeated branching from common ancestors, a process that came to be called, drum roll please, evolution. The mechanism of evolution, Darwin's, quote, natural selection, close quote, determines how plants and animals come to look and behave as they do. Now, he goes on to defend the theory of evolution a little bit by talking about, first of all, what theory means. When scientists say theory, they mean a statement based on observation or experimentation that explains facets of the observable world so well that it becomes accepted as fact.
And that's where we start breaking off, Stan.
No, wait a minute. Experimentation, when have they done experimentation on evolution that's proven or even suggested that there's any truth to the theory of evolution?
No, maybe some observation they want to push forward. Well, really what's helpful here, Stan, for people to listen today is that I want to look at two ways of approaching the material around us, or anything for that matter, any subject, whether it be history, science. Will Durant shares this in some of his early books, Christ and Caesar and the Fall of the Roman, and all these other books on the Bible and history and stuff. Not so much the Bible, but history.
Mm-hmm.
Will Durant wrote in one of his prologues to one of his books, he says, there's a synthetic history and analytic history. And he tells you, synthetic history is study of the major phases of life and work and cultures. It's kind of getting the balloon view or the mountaintop view, the big picture.
A synthetic view. In other words, you put things together.
All things together. You see it as a whole.
What works in a big picture?
Yes.
Okay.
And then analytic history is looking at the little details. And sometimes there's devils in the details, so to speak, but it's very categorized. Sometimes you do, if you're studying just the politics of history or the religion or just science or just philosophy or just the literature, any one of those things will give you a snapshot of some things, but how does it fit into the bigger picture? Mm-hmm. How much weight should it have?
Oh, how much weight does each individual
piece have?
Yeah, okay.
Science, by nature, is analytic.
Mm-hmm.
It's looking at finches,
the pieces,
beaks.
The little pieces.
Yeah, it's looking at cells. It's looking at DNA. It's looking at chemical processes. Or it's looking at stars and novas and gravitational thing fields and stuff. The whole point is that what he argues is there is a weakness. The tendency of analytic science or analytic thinking, I want to say, is to distort an isolated part, giving it more weight or undue weight than it really deserves.
Okay. Well, do you have like an idea or
Well, yeah. Well, Darwin's beaks.
Oh, okay.
When Darwin saw these beaks that were there and he saw it as he all of a sudden gave such emphasis to that variation that in these species that
and it became the answer to all the questions in life practically.
Yeah, practically for him.
Yeah.
It just kinda, that seemed to be from most people's perspective a little bit of undue emphasis.
Well, yes, for instance, you can either get from the idea that there's variation in beak sizes of these finches in the Galapagos Islands that Darwin saw. It can be anywhere from there. Oh, look at finches have an inherent ability to adapt through certain generations to certain areas. Okay, so they're adaptable. Now, what he did was he took that and he ran with it to
and
the
extrapolated
end of the
it over oh, everything.
You wind that, the clock back, you get down to an amoeba or
if he
a protein
was
an, soup.
If he was an artist, he'd have dipped the brush into the finch's beak paint and painted the entire picture with it instead of painting one little beak with it.
Exactly.
And the trouble with synthetic history or synthetic approach, the difficulty is that it's impossible to speak firsthand about every issue of complexity. It's really hard, and that's why they're struggling for what they sometimes call the theory of everything.
The theory of everything.
And they have Einstein's. A new champion they're trying to push forward on PBS. It's their show, their origin show. It's Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Okay.
Just call him Neil for short.
Mm-hmm.
Neil is trying to push forward these theories of everything. He's an astrophysicist. He probably also has a degree in astrobiology since he could probably pass the final. How many genuses and species do we know have existed in outer space?
Mm-hmm.
None.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me get your PhD in astrobiology.
Yeah, we've joked about that on Saint Domingo before.
We like that. Anyway, the whole point is he's trying to replace Carl Sagan, I think, on the dollar scale or the expert scale.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole idea is he realizes there is a great big difficulty when you start looking at evolution as they accept it and teach it from biology versus physics versus any other major scientific issue you want to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the question we have. How can you look? Are you more analytic or are you more synthetic? The question is, can you learn more about the nature of, say, humanity or man through the study of 60 centuries or through the readings of one philosopher?
Okay.
In other words, a philosopher is going to have an analytic approach from his own one viewpoint in mind.
His worldview.
And whereas you're a whole lot better off to study the trends of humanity over time, and you'll get a little clearer picture of our nature, why we exist. And you know, we talked last time together, Stan, a little bit about why do so many people not really quite buy into evolution and their biological creation story, though it's been being taught for 50 years?
By this National Geographic, which is sort of the evangelistic magazine for evolutionism. They're trying very hard to, in fact, I think the whole purpose of this issue was to try to reinforce people's thinking that, yeah, it's okay. And he even said specifically, it's okay, you can believe in God. This will not do away with God. No, don't worry. No, God's still around. No, don't worry, religious people. He just didn't have anything to do with us.
Yeah. But we made him up, and he's part of our mind.
Yeah, or he had precious little to do. We can explain everything in scientific ways. So, yeah, no, there's no question that despite the kinds of efforts by National Geographic, by Neil Tyson deGrasse PBS and Nova series, despite of all this, America still is careful about going this way. It doesn't hit them as being a very good world picture. The synthetic apparatus doesn't seem to be there.
Yeah, they can't. It's hard to synthesize all the analytic
data. Put it all together. Yeah.
That's the way the science presents it, because there's just way too many conflicts. How can you have a partial eye that's anything of use that would be known? It almost seems like that these processes of evolution are almost prophetic or have a divine purpose behind it.
Put a rock on the table, wait a few billion years, and there you'll have a nice warm puppy.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, and that is what evolutionism teaches.
Yeah. We have a torpedo text, Dan, that kind of talks about it, and it comes from an interesting thing from a king that he was looking at his kingdom and all the pieces all around him and thinking that he was such a major important part of why the Great Babylon exists. It's found in the book of Daniel. I believe it was in chapter 434. I'm not sure.
That's exactly right. We'll pick it up right there, talking about Nebuchadnezzar, a king of Babylon. But at the end of that period, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes toward heaven, and my reason returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honor him who lives forever. For his dominion as an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom endures from generation to generation. It's interesting, the wording there is that when he raised his eyes towards heaven, when his worldview began to accept an all-powerful, really, truly there Creator God, who holds still the world under his control, the boundaries he sets for nations and kingdoms are still at his whim. When he saw that, when he understood that, his reason returned to him. And I think that's a very interesting evolution in his thinking.
He kind of got that real well. The whole point is that he now had an ultimate authority. Mm-hmm. He now had a picture that all the pieces started to fit. I mean, mm-hmm. science can't explain where we come from or mm-hmm. why we exist.
Right.
We're just an accident. There's no moral purpose to our existence. There's no destiny after we die. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all kinds of questions that humans naturally have that seem to be also that science is the whys and the how comes.
And when science refuses or is unable to accept this God over all things, it seems like all they have left to look at is really just little things, little details,
and bits trying and to make tiny pieces.
Yeah, and they can't just synthesize it and put it together in a believable, at least for most Americans, picture.
And that's what's interesting is they have created these scenarios you find in your high school biology textbooks that mm-hmm. It might have happened something like this, but actually they've proven that those illustrations they use, good scientists said, you know, these aren't even good science, these illustrations we're using.
The Miller-Urey protein soup stuff that they used to say a lot about has now been disproven.
And yeah, the hominid sequence, the embryonic...
best shot now pretty much is transsperma, you know, little green men bringing
outer space. Let's go by and check out some moons of Saturn and see if we can find a little life that might be there. We'll spend a couple billion dollars and send a little satellite by.
And listener, if that doesn't make much sense to you, it doesn't make much sense to us. So we want to encourage you to find as your authority, the source of your big picture, the God who the Bible speaks about.
And we think that's what will give you the foundation and the reason that you would like to find like Nebuchadnezzar did.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time for Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friend. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.